On this episode of She's Off Script.
But it's all that cocaine laying around. I don't want her to get hooked. And so I had to explain to her grandma that's not real cocaine. She said, it's not. I said, no, it's fake. She was like, oh. And after that, she was good.
You probably recognize her from her role as Aunt Louie on the FX network show Snowfall. On today's episode, we talk about how Angela landed this breakout role, her journey to Hollywood, and the sacrifices she's had to make to get to where she is today.
I moved to New York just after 9/11, and they were like, are you sure you want to go right now? Like, maybe you want to put it off. And I just, there was something in me that knew if I put it off, I'm not going to go.
She shares how she's had to learn to be more transparent on social media as she reaches new career heights.
I know a few actors who are like, I don't care, I'm not doing this social media thing. There's a million reasons to be told no. And I don't want to be told no because somebody else has more followers than me, you know, and I haven't even made the effort.
Speaking of a million reasons to be told no, she went deep with us as she shared her experiences navigating Hollywood as a Black woman, her perspectives on the Me Too movement, and so much more.
Acting is not for the faint of heart. If there's anything else that you would rather do, you should probably do that.
Go off script with me as I talk to actor Angela Lewis. Angela Lewis, welcome to She's Off Script. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm so glad we could get you on the show today. I'm such a fan of your role on Snowfall.
Oh, thank you.
I am so excited to see Aunt Louie come into her own in season 3.
Yes, me too.
But for our listeners who are unfamiliar with you, could you give us the highlights of your story, just from being raised in Detroit to now playing Aunt Louie on FX's Snowfall?
Yeah, so like you just said, I was born and raised in Detroit, and I went to college in Ann Arbor, Michigan, at University of Michigan. Go Blue.
Nice, nice.
And then I moved to New York to pursue my dream of acting. I was in New York for quite a while, and I did a lot of theater off Broadway, mostly new plays, really just standing on the brink of American theater. So that it was really exciting. Those are my struggling actor days.
And I want to hear all about those as well.
Yes. So then I got married, and a part of our sort of wedding plan was to move to California, to LA, right after we got married. So that's what we did. And I've been in LA for 4 years now.
Oh, and you must be loving that weather right now.
Yes.
In New York, it must be chilly.
I know. It's chilly everywhere. Everywhere I've ever lived is chilly, except for here in LA. It's nice and warm and toasty. And that's a big reason why I love it here. Yeah.
Every time I visit, I'm just like, wow, is it like this all year round?
Yes, it is. I mean, you know, even in the winter when it's like rainy season, it's still like, oh, that's cute. So I'm so happy.
Oh, no, but then we run into the traffic where something like a 5 mile trip will take you an hour and you're just like, eh.
Yeah. I bet, you know, sometimes all the time. I'll take that over being stuck on the subway station for an hour and it's stinky and hot and you're like pressed up against somebody and somebody's armpit and it's just, you know, not fun.
I would take that in my car any day too. So I hear that growing up as a child, your mom would take you to the theater and then also had enrolled you in summer and after school programs. So what was your earliest memory of acting?
It would have to be, I guess it was first grade. My school did a production of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And I don't know, actually, this was in kindergarten. I was a reindeer.
You started young.
Yes. I was a reindeer in the school production, I guess, in my kindergarten class. That was my first acting. That was my acting debut. And then in first grade, we did a production of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And my teacher thought I did such a good job in the previous production that she created a role for me. And I played young Snow White.
Aww.
Yeah.
So it sounds like your parents were very supportive then of the acting path that you're on.
Absolutely. I don't know how they couldn't have been, because they kind of kicked it off. You know, uh-huh. they, you know, took us to the theater. They put me in dance class. And so I enjoyed it and I excelled in it. And so I think it would have been pretty cruel to be like, oh, but no, you can't actually do this. You know what I mean?
So did you ever consider another career, though, or you were just dead set on
There acting. there were moments when I guess I got from the outside world that you had to have a real job. And so I would always be like, okay, I'm going to be an actress and a lawyer. What was the other? An actress and, I don't know, something else. It was always an actress and something else. Mm-hmm. And then when I realized, oh, no, you can actually do this, then I cut everything out. Like, oh, now I'm going to be an actress.
Yeah. And I want to hear about the you can actually just be an actor and not anything else piece, just because I think that's still the mindset of a lot of people where they don't want to follow their passions just because they're afraid of what the outside world will think or someone else has put in a perspective of what success looks like in their minds. And, you know, 10 years down the road, they're still doing someone else's dream.
Yeah, it's really sad when that happens. But go ahead. I didn't want to cut you off.
No, not at all. But I was going to say, just given how supportive your family was of that path, what did they think of your move to New York?
They were excited for me, but also really like scared. And I moved to New York just after 9/11. I moved October 1st, 2011. Oh, and they were like, are you sure you want to go right now? Like, maybe you want to put it off. And there was something in me that knew if I put it off, I'm not going to go, you know, because life doesn't stop. I have to work. I had been offered department head at a school that I was teaching for that year. After I graduated, I was teaching full time and to save up money to move to New York. And the principal there offered me the job of department head for the performing arts department. And I, you know, explained to him when I was applying for the job that I was only going to be there for a year. And he knew that he was a former teacher of mine. And and when he offered me the job, I was like, oh, no. And so then when 9/11 happened and I had the choice to still move or stay, and if I stay, I'm going to take this job and that's going to be it.
And you'll get comfortable.
Exactly. And I knew that I would live with regrets and I didn't want to live that way.
So how did you make ends meet once you got to New York? New York is an expensive city.
Yes, it is.
Were you the starving artist or how did
Absolutely.
You make that work?
Well, my first landlord, he made my roommate and I put down 6 months rent in advance.
Whoa.
Yes.
Who has that?
Exactly. So that like wiped out all my savings. So luckily I had, you know, teaching experience. So I found a job as a teaching artist. I was teaching dance actually in an after school program, hip hop dance. And so I did that for a little while. And then I was dancing with this sort of semi-professional hip hop dance company. And one of the dancers was a bartender. And she was like, girl, you better get on this bartending gig. You make so much money. So I went to bartending school and then pretty much begged my way into my first bartending job.
Oh my goodness. But you have to do it. You have to do whatever it takes just to sustain
Absolutely.
Your passion.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So you mentioned that you then started auditioning. And so as you were auditioning, I mean, I can imagine as a new actor, it's difficult to have full control of your career, especially when you're just starting. So did you have to say yes to a lot of roles that you felt like just weren't a good fit or were less than ideal just to grow your career?
Absolutely. I said yes to all kinds of crap. I remember I was in one play where the play was really good. I won't mention the play because I don't want the person, my director to come across this. The play was, it was risky just from the title itself. But it was a play that was written in like sometime between 68 and 72. Mm-hmm. So it was like, you know, something to the, like, you jive turkey, something, something, something. It was like, oh, do I want to be in a play that's talking about jive turkey in the title? You know what I mean? But the play was actually really funny. And I was like, okay, I can do this. I knew in my gut that it was not going to be a good production. It was just really, really amateur. Mm-hmm. And I prided myself on the fact that even though I was just starting out, I had a certain amount of training. I had a certain amount of integrity in my mm-hmm. work and the work that I had done, you know, up to that point. But I just really wanted to work. And right. something said, don't do this production. It's not going to be good. And I did it anyway, because I was like, well, the play itself is good and I'm good, so mm-hmm. I can make it work. And every night at the final curtain call, I hated coming out to the stage. I hated taking my bow.
Oh, no.
I didn't want anyone to like see me in this anymore. Like, no, I didn't want to be associated with
How
this.
How long so, did it last?
It only ran, I think like 2 weekends or something like that. So it was quick, but it was just like, oh, it was heartbreaking. It was terrible. And I decided in that moment, you don't have to say yes to anything. You know, you if it doesn't feel right, or if you know it's not going to be good, you don't have to say yes. Just say no.
Well, that's very brave of you so early on in your career, just because a lot of people feel like I just need to throw myself into whatever to get my mm-hmm. name out there. Mm-hmm. And so that really shows how much confidence you had in yourself early on. But so you land in New York, you're doing whatever it takes to pay your bills. How did you first break into the auditioning scene? What was that process?
Yeah, well, in New York, I would say New York is a bit easier to break into the business just when you're just starting out mm-hmm. than in LA. New York, everything is a bit more accessible, a bit more hands-on. And, you know, I went through the backstage. The backstage is a trade paper, and at the end or at the back section, there's a whole part where it just lists all these auditions and open calls and all nice. That stuff. And so I would just comb through, like combing through here are the jobs that are available, and you just comb through and circle things, just mm-hmm. like you see in like
the classified ads.
Yeah, the classifieds.
Does this exist anymore?
Exactly.
I haven't seen an actual newspaper in a while.
Exactly. I don't think it does. I think it's online now, but I would, you know, my last little $3.25 I would spend on the backstage, and then, you know, go through and go to all the open call auditions and, you know, X out what I didn't think, you know, was a right fit for me. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of rejection, a lot of, a lot of long lines. Yeah.
And so as you were auditioning for those roles, did you ever feel like acting wasn't in fact meant for you as you were getting rejections? And how did you keep your spirits up in those moments of self-doubt?
Yeah, I never thought that acting wasn't for me. I would think, I would be confused, like, what is happening in my life right now? Like, I just, you know, when I would get really frustrated, I would always take a minute and say, okay, what are you going to do? Are you going to keep mm-hmm. at this? Or are you going to go home? Or are you going to, is there anything else that you would rather do? And anytime that question came up, I would really, really think about it. Like, well, maybe I could just bartend. Once I started bartending mm-hmm.
or go back to teaching. Well,
and, yeah, exactly. And everything would come up short. Everything would make me feel like, oh, that's just not what I want to do. And so that in and of itself was enough to like keep me going. And then, you know, when I, you know, really started making money, bartending and cocktail waitressing, then it became like, oh, well, you can sustain yourself. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, well, but that's not what you moved here to do. So, you know, you can do this anywhere. You don't have to be in New York City paying all of this money for rent and Metro cards and snowstorms and all of that. Like, if this is what you're going to do, you can go somewhere else. And
seriously.
Then, yeah. And so it's like, well, I don't want to move. This is, you know, I want to act. And so that was motivation to, you know, stick with it, to get back up on the horse and keep going.
Well, that's good to know then that you had to talk yourself up at some point. It wasn't always just, you know, flowers and success.
No, there were a lot of points where I was talking myself through it and crying, cried many, many tears. Yeah, it's rough. It's still, you know, it still has its rough moments, and it'll always have its rough moments because the bar keeps getting higher and higher. My dreams keep expanding, you know, and so there's always going to be moments where you're going to be like, what am I doing? You know,
right. But at this point, do you feel like you've made it?
I feel like I have attained a large portion of my initial dream. Okay. And the dream is still expanding. I'm starting to move into other aspects of the career. There's always new levels, you know, where that I'm trying to get to just in the acting itself. And so made it is a tricky word because I don't know that I'll ever make it. I feel like when I make it, it's time to either move on or transition on to other planes.
That's a great attitude to have. There's always more. And I think if you're not learning, you're not growing, you're dying. So I think that's a great attitude to have.
Exactly.
So at this point, you know, Snowfall is coming back for season 3. Congrats on that.
Thank you.
At this stage in your career, are there trade-offs that you're not willing to make then, even if it's going to, you know, result in a bigger role or whatever it is for you?
Yeah. I think I kind of learned early on that, you know, there's always going to be trade-offs, and it really is a matter of checking in with myself every step of the way. You know, what is it that you're wanting? What is your end goal in terms of, like, you know, just integrity? Is this going to, you know, sustain me in some kind of creative capacity, or is it about the money for this particular project? Or is it about, if it's about the money, is it, am I still going to be able to maintain my integrity?
Right.
You know, there's always a checking in. I think it's a mistake to kind of make a blanket statement about one's career. I'm only going to do this, or I'm not going to do that. Or I'm, you know, it's like, oh, you can, if you like, but the way I move through life is whenever I'm given an opportunity, even if it seems like a wonderful opportunity, I have to check in with myself, like, okay, well, this is great. I'm going to make all this money and I'm going to do this. And this person is involved, this director, whatever, but it's a commitment. It's a time commitment. How do you feel about that? You know, and people are like, what do you mean you didn't just jump at it? No, how can I just jump at something? The minute I start just jumping at stuff, it's kind of over. You know what I mean? Cause you get into that habit, and I don't think it's good to just jump at things. I think it's perfectly fine to kind of weigh the pros and cons, even if it seems like an obvious choice.
So could you let us walk in your shoes for a moment? Could you share with us what was the process like finding your current role in Snowfall? You know, from finding the role all the way through filming and promo, how does that all work?
Yeah, so Snowfall came to me, like all auditions do. I got an email from my agent and manager, and I went in, and it was a really good experience. The audition scene was from the pilot, and it's where Aunt Louie is, you know, watching her stories, and then the commercial comes on and she goes out and she fights the girl.
Yep.
So I was like, this is insane. Okay. And you know, when you audition, there's no one, you're not fighting anyone. There's no one cast in the other role yet. So I worked with my husband, who we coach each other in auditions and things, and he was helping me, you know, get my angles right and making sure that my blows looked believable. And it was so crazy. And I went in, I got a call back. The call back was later that day. And that was exciting. And I went in for the call back. And then I got a call later after that saying they want me to come in for the chemistry read the next day.
What's a chemistry read?
A chemistry read is, so for this particular one, there were two people up for Aunt Louie. That was myself and one other person. There were two people up for Jerome, and that was Eamon, Joseph, and another person. And so you just kind of switch, you know, switch back and forth. It was a really fun day, and it happened to be my birthday. And so I was like feeling really good. Eamon and I went into that room, and we just, it was all improv, as directed by, who told us that? I guess it was Tommy, that one of the producers. I was like, okay, we're just going to improv and go. And Eamon was so amazing that I just couldn't help but just go. And it was just like a thing, just like, woo, 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 woo. And it was just a really tumultuous, juicy, energetic moment. And we walked out and we were just like so pumped up, like, yeah, we did that. And it was,
and you guys work well together on screen. There is that good on screen chemistry.
And then they made me wait a week before I heard anything, and I was in panic mode. And I actually was supposed to be going out of the country to a wedding in Nicaragua. And so in that time, in the week, so in the days after the chemistry read, my husband, who also is an actor, he had an audition for a different project, but in the same casting director's office. So he went in and he saw that they were still seeing people for Aunt Louie. So he came home and he was like, "Bae, I think we need to just focus on our trip." And I was like, "Okay." And so that's
did that director know that you guys were married?
No. Well, it was a totally different project that he was working on. So the director, that my director was not there.
Just the same office.
So we started booking our hotels and everything. And, you know, and I was really grateful for that, because it really allowed me to take my mind off of Snowfall, because I was going crazy. Like, it's been 2 days and I haven't heard anything. There was a post on Deadline that said Eamon Joseph booked Snowfall, and I was like, what?
What about me?
You booked it and I didn't book it? Oh my God. Like, I was freaking out. So I was really grateful for just the, okay, let's move on. And then the following, I guess that was a Friday. I think my birthday was on a Friday that year. So it was exactly a week later, I got the phone call that I had actually booked it. But yes, my letter of intent, though, where it says, you know, Angela Lewis has booked the role, yada, yada, is dated on my birthday. So they knew. So I don't know what the holdup was.
What a present
yeah,
to get.
Exactly.
And so now that you have the role,
yes,
what does it look like for you when it comes to preparing now to play Aunt Louie?
Yeah, so in the beginning, it was really tough, because I was like, I don't know anything about this world and what this woman is like going through. Like, how am I going to play her? I like freaked out. And I said, well, okay, well, what do I know about her? And how, well, I was really interested in how she got there. Like, how do you get to this place and to being this hard, hardened? And what I realized was that she has been told no her whole life. And every door has been slammed in her face, which is the exact opposite of me. Like, you know, being an actor, you get told no all the time, but getting told no for a role is very different from getting told no, you can't be anything in life. Like, you can't do anything. You can't, like, you're just the lowest of the low. And that hurt my feelings. And I was like, wow, if this is hurting my feelings, imagine how she must feel walking in those shoes every day for her entire life. Like, that's tremendous heartbreak. And so when I had that moment, it was an epiphany. It was like, oh, there's my entrance right there. Mm-hmm. Heartbreak. Like, I understand heartbreak. And now I can just imagine years and years and years of heartbreak. And no wonder she's doing CHRM. You know what I mean? Right. She wants to escape. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that was my entrance. And that just made everything so much more clear. And it allowed me to really love her. And I knew that a big part of my mission in playing her was to love her if no one else was going to love her. Mm-hmm. Because at the time I didn't know anyone in the creative team. I didn't, you know, especially being a actor of color, you know, we are very, or I am very concerned about the images that I'm portraying. Right. And how people are seeing me, and oh, another person, another show about drugs, another person doing drugs, another person dealing drugs. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't want her, with this new understanding that I had of her, I didn't want her to be kind of tossed aside and for anyone to make her into a caricature.
Right, right.
And so, you know, I really decided to accept the role when I was like, okay, well, if you don't take this role, who's going to do it? And are they going to do her justice? Are they going to mm-hmm. love her? Are they going to make her into a full human being? You don't know. So right. It's your responsibility. You are the one who loves her. And so that's kind of the starting point that I kind of step into every time I get a new script. Mm-hmm. Well, where's the love? Where's the humanity? Where's the dignity? Louis is a boss. She's always known she's a boss. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, for her entire life, no one else has known that. And they've treated her like garbage. And so her journey really is to really step into those boss shoes by any means necessary.
Right. But kind of going back to the comment you made about perceptions around women of color and how you're portraying Louis. Mm-hmm. How did you feel about your family watching the show? Because it is mature television.
Absolutely.
What did they think about it? What does your mom think about the show?
My whole family, they love the show.
Oh, good.
Yeah. They're like, I mean, you know, the only warning I gave anybody was that mm-hmm. it's an intense show. It's gritty.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. So there you go. And
there are some scenes where I was like this, like watching through my fingers, because I can get a little bit squeamish, but I like the storyline.
Exactly. That's my whole family. My grandmother was the one who, my father's mother was the one who was like,
ooh, grandma.
Concerned. Yeah, she was concerned. She didn't, you know, and when they explained to her, grandma is just make believe. And she was like, okay. She was like, but it's all that cocaine laying around. I don't want her to get hooked. And so I had to explain to her, grandma, that's not real cocaine. Okay. She said, it's not. I said, no, it's fake. She was like, oh. No. And after that, she was good.
Oh, gosh. They're like, well, we like to keep it real. We have real. Yeah. Whatever those squares of coke are called.
Right, the cookies.
Oh, well, you know, I'm sure that's something that actors have to grapple with whenever they're taking on more mature, controversial roles is the people Absolutely. In their lives. How are they going to take it? And it is make-believe. It really is.
Yeah.
So continuing on that journey, so you now prepare to step into the shoes of Aunt Louie. Mm-hmm. Now that the show is done filming, what is your filming schedule like?
Yeah, it's we usually shoot from like January until May. Mm-hmm. And it is intense. And depending on the episode, like there are some days when I'm on set for like 14, 16 hours. Ooh. There are some days when there was one day I was on set. This was in the first season for 45 minutes and I was done for the entire episode. And I was like, all right, see you later. and so in anything in between, I would say probably Damson, who plays Franklin, he probably has the most intense schedule. But I have been really blessed in that I get to experience, you know, the fullness of what a working schedule can be. And mm-hmm. at the same time, I get to experience oh, I'm not number one. Okay, everybody wants to be the star, but the stars work hard, you
right,
know?
Right, so, I bet.
You know, I get to experience, oh, I have a light schedule this week. Okay, you know, let me go live my life and go to the beach or whatever, you know? So it's a little bit of everything. And
so really what does a day in your life look like, filming or shooting versus not shooting?
Yeah, you know, it's really... I was going to say spontaneous, but it's not so, well, it can be very spontaneous, but it's just varied. You know, I'm the exact opposite of a 9-to-5. You know what I mean? Like, it's really hard to kind of plan in advance. You try, but, you know, like, even when I'm traveling, I book now refundable tickets because I've lost a lot of money on having to cancel flights, you know, because...
But why is that? Is there no set shooting schedule that you know? It just
well, no. Well, there's a you have a shooting schedule, and usually the shooting schedule is for the episode. Okay. But you don't get your schedule. So, like, episode. Let's say we're shooting episode one. Episode two comes in, or the schedule for episode two comes in, probably through like 4 days ahead of time.
Kind of hard to plan in advance in that way.
Yeah, then. And then you get your schedule, but then things change. So you're really on hold. Let's say I have one scene in episode two. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm working this one day. I'm working Tuesday. Okay, and then something changes and then things get shifted around and now I'm not working on Tuesday. I'm working on Thursday. Mm-hmm. Or a scene was added. So I'm working on Tuesday and Friday. And so I have to be open. And so you can't really... make any set plans because your availability is specifically for Snowfall.
Got it. And so, you know, people are fascinated with Hollywood romances and relationships, you know, with the Brangelinas and whoever else is. Yeah. How do you maintain a healthy relationship with your friends and families, just given the hectic schedule you described? And does it help that your husband is also in Hollywood?
It does. It does. You know, I think that Hollywood relationships are very similar. I mean, they're like any relationship. Certainly they're, you know, special things. And when I say special, that could be special positive and special negative, but special things that come with Hollywood, you know, your life is in the limelight, mm-hmm. you know. People have access to you, whether it be welcomed access or imposed access. Mm-hmm. So there's that. But at the heart of it, it's all just relationships and we're all people. And so there needs to be a love and a respect right. of each other. And, you know, I've missed a lot of weddings and I've missed a lot of baby showers because I've had to work. And this is before Hollywood. This is even when I was doing a lot of theater mm-hmm. and trying to get my career off the ground. But and as far as I know, you know, people have been extremely forgiving and loving. And now it's interesting. My husband's grandmother is the one who said, well, you know, you miss a lot of things. She really said this to us. You miss a lot of things. And so when you are available, you be sure to make it. And so you go to all the weddings and all the birthdays and all the things that you absolutely can. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. So, I mean, that's good to see that it's doable. I love to see positive images of couples of color who are in the limelight, who are able to at least share that with people who are looking up to them. So I noticed that you, speaking of being in the limelight, you recently shared clips of your trip to Europe on Instagram. So I think it's great that you've chosen to share parts of your life with your followers, but do you feel a bit of pressure to share your life given, you know, what you do for a living?
Absolutely. It's not easy for me. those clips from Europe have really been an effort for me to share more and to be more open to my followers and my fans. And even saying it is kind of weird, but
Yes, you have lots of fans.
But I find that the most difficult part is not so much the sharing, it's the sharing like now. Because it's like, I just want to be in the moment. I don't want to be thinking about, oh, I got to pull out my camera. And then when you do pull out the camera, now you're taking, you know, away from your beloved, you know, now you're not in the moment with them. And now you're, I guess, you know, as you practice, like with anything, you get better. But right now I'm like fixing the words and like, oh, and it takes longer for me to make
the
post.
Is this thing on?
Yeah, exactly. So, it's very interesting. While I was on our trip and I was doing so well with posting to my story, I was pickpocketed in in Venice, so, and they got my phone. Yeah, they got my phone. So for the whole, and Venice was halfway through the trip. And as soon as, you know, we took the train from Switzerland to Venice. And as soon as we got off the train, within that 10 minutes, my phone was gone. So the whole half of the trip, we documented on my husband's phone, but that was it for me. So it was kind of like a blessing and a curse. Like, oh man, I got my phone, but I had insurance. So I'm getting my phone back hopefully any day now. And, but it was also like, well, now there's nothing. I can't post anything on my own. So I'm kind of
fine.
Free to
enjoy
be in the moment. Yeah. And then I'll go back once I get my phone and kind of repost pictures and some the stories that we have. So it's that I just thought that was really interesting. Like, you know, you were going to be on the ball with this one. And
Well, then I'm looking forward to seeing more from you now that you're trying.
Yes.
But from a professional standpoint, do you feel like your social media footprint has any impact on whether or not you'll be considered for future roles?
Absolutely. That's a big part of, you know, why I feel like, you know, this is something that I'm going to do. Like, you know, I know a few actors who are like, I don't care. I'm not doing the social media thing. And, you know, I just feel like I never want to have, there's a million reasons to be told no. And I don't feel that the whole social media thing is so important. I just feel like there's got to be a way that I can make it work for my life and still have it be something that is an asset. I don't want to be told no because somebody else has more followers than me, you know, and I haven't even made the effort. You know what I mean? If I've made the effort and somebody comes in and they just got 2 billion followers, okay, I guess it just wasn't meant to be. But if I haven't even made the effort and they're saying no because I don't have followers, that to me, that's just like, well, Angela, you didn't really do everything that you could do, you know, and that's been a big part of my journey. And I think that should be a big part of everybody's journey who wants to be an actor. It's like, before you start whining and crying and complaining and, you know, talking about how you don't have an agent or your agent isn't doing this, have you done everything that you can do? You know,
absolutely. So, that's good advice. And so speaking of a million reasons why you could be told no, could you give me a little bit of insight into what it's like to navigate Hollywood as a woman of color?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a tough journey, you know, because I think it's a microcosm of what it is to be a woman of color in the world. You know, things happen and, you know, sometimes it's like, this is about me being black. Is this about me being a woman? Or is there something that I haven't done or something that I'm doing? Like, am I angry? Why am I angry? No, actually, I'm not angry. Mm-hmm. But when you said that, you made me angry. You know what I mean? So it's and I think, you know, in Hollywood, there's still a lot of, you know, boys clubs and a lot of, you know, areas that we are still trying to like break through the door. And so, you know, it's just part of it. It's part of being a person of color, a woman of color in the world. And the minute I kind of accept that and roll over is the minute that it's like, well, what are you really doing? You know? I think it's a matter of balancing fighting with standing in who I am as love. I present love to the world, and so I expect love in return, and not expect love as in an entitled way, but I expect it, like, because I know the world to be a loving place, and that has nothing to do with the people in Hollywood. It has nothing to do with the machine that is Hollywood. It has nothing to do with anybody else, and everything to do with I am connected to everything. And so I am love as everything else is love. And that's what I will get in return.
No, so that's a great attitude to have, though, towards it. Because as you said, in any space, it's not easy to navigate when you're in the minority.
Right.
And so with the Me Too movement coming out, have you found that there's a little bit more collaboration amongst women in Hollywood, or has it just been business as usual?
I think the collaboration with women, particularly women of color, has always, as far as my experience has been, we have always been very collaborative, which has allowed for the Me Too movement to happen. It didn't, you know, there had to be a coming together in order for the beginnings of that to happen. Yeah. So, you know, I don't have the experience, and I hope to never have the experience where I feel like, you know, women don't work together or we don't support each other. That's never been my experience. So, I know us to be very supportive, and, you know, there's always going to be, you know, little cat fights, and everybody is not enlightened, or everybody, you know, is not in a very positive place all the time. So there's always going to be gossip. There's always going to be this and that, but, you know, that is a small part of the community that I have, kind of come up in.
Okay. So when you first got to Hollywood, who's the biggest star that you met that you just were starstruck about?
When I first got to Hollywood, let's see. Well, I, so I have quite a few friends who are friends with Niecy Nash. And I went to the SAG Awards for the first time this past year, and she was like right there. And she was with a friend of mine, and so she introduced us, and I was just like, oh my God, it's me. My hand was like about to pop off. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, I feel like I know you. And she went, and I was like, and I couldn't say anything else. And she was just like, okay. She walked away, and I was you didn't tell her why you feel like you know her, because all of your friends know her. And like, and I was like, well, that was awkward.
Well, that's a big starstruck moment. And so, but I'm sure as you've grown into Hollywood, you're just a part of the fabric.
I mean, I don't know. I still feel like there's, you know, every time I go to another event, there's like people and I'm like, oh my God, you know? And so what I promised myself after that moment, because I had a couple other moments similar to that, I think that was by far the most awkward. I was like, you know, and I started paying attention to like my comedian actress friends, and they were just really good at, you know, in their stories or whatever, being like, yeah, and I told them I love you so much, and you know why they were a fan, and that they were a fan, and they watched, and they were not afraid to like go ahead and fangirl out, which I felt like was a lot less awkward than like
or it's more expected as well.
Yeah, so I was like, you just need to tell people I'm such a fan, and you know, that's it. And people will be like, oh my goodness, who doesn't want to hear that, you know?
Right, it's flattering to hear.
It is.
And so when you look at young actors starting out today who are fangirling out at you and want to be you, what's your advice for them? Is there anything you wish you knew maybe at the beginning of your journey that would have made it easier?
So much. I wish that I had known to just enjoy the journey. Mm. It's going to work out. And if it doesn't, you'll know. You'll start to feel it. You know, when something is not right, you feel it. And I think, and I've told a couple people who I know who've, you know, transitioned out of acting, and there's a lot of shame. It's like, oh, I'm giving up, or, oh, I'm quitting. And nobody wants to be a quitter, right? Mm. But I think there's a big difference between quitting and deciding that something else is more important.
Absolutely.
You know, priority shift all the time. And mm-hmm. so I would just say, you know, pay attention to yourself, pay attention to that voice that, you know, that teeny tiny voice that's whispering to your gut, that thing that never steers you wrong, that thing that makes the red flags wave. Like when you're paying attention to that, life is a lot easier. You know, doesn't mean that things won't go wrong. It doesn't mean that things won't, or will always go your way, but it mm-hmm. will certainly save you from a lot, from massive heartache and massive mistakes, you know? Right. Enjoy the journey. It's tough, and but there is no, you know, a lot of the times we think when I make it, it's gonna be this. Mm-hmm. When I make it, it's gonna be that. But okay, we can look at it two ways. We can look at it like, okay, well, when you make it, you right. know, who knows when that's going to be, right? But ultimately, like I said before, there is no when you make it. There's always going to be more and more that you're looking to do. So if you're not enjoying the journey, you will have missed your entire life waiting for this thing that isn't really real, mm-hmm. you know? So
also, just given that you had supportive parents when you started out your journey, what advice would you give parents who have kids who have their sights set on Hollywood, but these parents are just terrified just because they think their parents aren't, or their kids aren't being realistic about their goals, or, you know, that their kids will become starving artists? What advice would you have for them?
That's hard, because your kids probably will be starving artists, you know, for who knows how long. And parents, you know, you always want what's best for your kids. Mm-hmm. I would say that particularly in this world, just because you have a degree doesn't mean that you're going to make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and you can get a degree in acting, you know, one should, right. you know, one should study acting. It is a craft. Mm-hmm. And I think that, one of the things that, parents, it's when you bring home that check that parents are like, oh,
so this does work. This is
okay.
A career.
You know, and so, you know, you just, I don't know. I don't know what to say to parents, because you really just want what's best for your kids. But I mm-hmm. would say, you know, you have to let your kids make their own decisions. Now, there are some kids whose families, you know, kind of, stop financially supporting them if they're gonna go down this path.
Ooh, and when they need it most. Ooh.
Yeah. And I can't speak to that. That is a choice. And you know, my parents were not able to financially support me. You know, they did what they could, but you know, I was pretty much on my own. And so I would never tell, you know, a parent to not financially support, you know, their blossoming, you know, adult. But I would say to the child, if that happens, it is not the end of the world. You will find your way. Millions of people do it all the time. It's part of life. So
get a side hustle, get something. These days, yeah. there's so many ways to sustain yes. yourself.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's the thing. I can't really speak to the parents, because that, you know, usually you make your decisions out of love and you do the best that you can. But mm-hmm. to the aspiring actor, I would say, if you really want to do it, don't let anyone or anything stop you, but make sure that, you know, you're coming at it from a serious place, mm-hmm. because Hollywood is not for the faint of heart. Acting is not for the faint of heart. If there's anything else that you would rather do, you should probably do that.
Ooh, that is such good advice. Just like you soul searched and said, is there something else I would rather be doing? It's good to check in with yourself to make sure you're just, you don't just have stars in your eyes, but you're willing to put in the work.
Exactly. It's a lot of work, as always. So,
let's turn that question around a bit. Could you share the worst advice you have ever received?
The worst advice? The worst advice I've ever received was probably something like, I mean, who cares? Just do it. Like, that's, people say that all the time, you know, I mean, who cares? Just do it. Like, no, you gotta care about everything. And I don't know, other like worst advice. I don't know. I probably blocked it out.
You're like, oh, okay, thanks. Just
Exactly. And I like to think I have a village of pretty smart and people who, really think things through and soul search. So I don't surround myself with too many people who are giving, just doling out bad advice.
Well, that's good to hear, because you will need that support system, I can imagine, when things get rough.
Yeah, for sure. And so,
this may seem obvious, but how do you make money as an actor? So like on a show like Snowfall, for example, as far as negotiating contracts, you know, how often are those checks coming in on the different projects that you're working on?
Yeah, so it depends on each project. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. With Snowfall and TV shows in general, you negotiate or your team negotiates a contract, and then the contract is kind of put in place even before you book the job. Mm. So it's usually when you're doing the test part is when, you know how much you're making or how much that, and I didn't have to experience that with the chemistry read, because the chemistry read, it's technically different from like testing. Mm-hmm. But when you test, you know how much you're going to make, you know what that contract is. And if it's particularly if it's your first big thing, or if it's that thing, that next level type job, it's really like a lot of pressure. You're like, don't mess this up. Which, is the last thing you need to be thinking about when you go in the room. But you negotiate the contract. And so that is the contract until it's, time to renegotiate or move on. And so, you usually paid by episode. Our episodes are like a week and a half to shoot each one. And then there's residuals. And then, with film, it's a whole different contract. And then there's like the union. Union has minimum salaries, and then you negotiate up from there. And then if you're doing video games, it's a whole different thing, or voiceover, so it all varies. But usually the contract is negotiated, and you usually will get paid a certain amount per episode.
You just need to be wise about budgeting out, just depending on what projects you have coming in and what checks you have coming in.
Yeah. So, if we shoot Snowfall from January to May, then that means I get paid for the first 5 months of the year. And then after that, I maybe will get my last check maybe in June or something like that. So yeah, I have to negotiate, or I have to budget out how much to spend and how much to save to sustain me until the following January.
So I actually enjoyed working with your team to set up this interview. How did you get a team, like the managers and PR? How did you find them?
Yeah, it was a long road because, when you first get into the industry, that's usually the first thing that everybody wants to do. I need to get an agent because you know, I mean, for the obvious reasons, but I would say that when you first get in, it's you always ask the you know, new actor, well, what kind of agent do you want? Or what kind of manager do you want? Somebody that's going to get me work. That's always the answer.
Not quite enough.
No, like you have to know, like, what is it that you want in an agent? What is it that you want in a manager? And that's hard to know when you're first starting out. And so it really is a matter of like trial and error. You know, my first managers, you know, I was a grown woman and they were really treating me like I was a child. And that became clear about midway through the relationship. And then shortly thereafter, we parted ways. But so it became clear to me, oh, I need representatives who are going to treat me like I'm an adult. And so if I'm expected to be treated like an adult, then I have to behave like an adult and I have to make adult decisions and I have to have things thought out and I have to use my voice and say what it is that I want. So I really had to find agency over myself. But yeah, you hire a representative and, you know, for what it either works or it doesn't. And if it doesn't, hopefully you learn from that. And so then the next time you go into an interview situation, you are a little bit more equipped with knowledge about what it is that you want out of this relationship. And so that kind of just multiplies and compiles, and then eventually, hopefully, you find the agent or the manager who works for you. And then now I have to bring on a publicist. Okay, what do I want a publicist? Anna. So I'm learning as I go. Oh, now I have to have an attorney. Well, what do I want an attorney? Somebody who's gonna
have a law degree.
It really is a constant learning situation. And, you know, hopefully all the things that you learned in the beginning stages will, you know, equip you in every situation so that you have enough information about yourself and enough awareness of the energy in the room, because a lot of it is energy. If you walk into a room and the person is condescending to you, then maybe you don't want to work with this person.
Red flag. Yeah,
exactly. So just to be paying attention to that, you know. Yeah. And hopefully it works out. And then if it doesn't, then it wasn't the right thing for you and you don't need to fall apart about it. You know, just move on and you'll find somebody else.
I love how you said you need to take agency over yourself and speak up. Don't expect people to drive your career or drive your ship for you.
Yeah.
That sounds like it's going to lead to nowhere good.
Yeah.
So really good advice that you realize that fairly early on.
Yeah. Thanks. So,
Angela, if you could put anything out into the universe, what sort of roles would you hope for next?
I would love to do a really funny, really smart rom-com.
Oh, I love rom-coms.
Yeah,
I have a soft spot for rom-coms and action thriller movies, which doesn't quite go, but you know.
No, we are real well-rounded people, you know.
So rom-com would be nice. What else?
I'm learning more and more that I'm really into science fiction in a way that I would not have guessed, but I have a short film called Let Them Die Like Lovers that is a sci-fi thriller. Or not a thriller, maybe. So it's a sci-fi like brain twister thing. And it's really good. And I really enjoyed working on it. I really enjoyed the process, the rehearsal process in terms of like asking the writer director. So what's happening here? So this is what I'm kind of interpreting. Is that where you are? And it was just really fun kind of like pulling that apart. I like stories that are exploring the movement between dimensions and times and things a bit more elevated than right here where we are. I would love to work on a project where I play a character that's not either not of this world or transitions into another world. Yeah, things like that.
Okay, so we'll look for that from you in the future. That sounds exciting.
Thank you.
That sounds exciting. Well, Angela, I've really, really loved my conversation with you today.
Yes, me too. Thank you.
So for anyone that would like to follow your career, where can they find you?
So I'm on Instagram and Twitter at Love Angela Lewis. Love is L-U-V. So at L-U-V Angela Lewis. And then I have a website, www.loveangelalewis.com.
Great. Well, I really appreciate the time today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Awesome.
Hi there. It's Sewa. In an upcoming episode, we'll be having a Q&A episode to answer some of your questions about my story, entrepreneurship, career and business strategy, this podcast, anything really. You can email us your questions to podcast@sewaajpelli.com or slide into our DMs on Instagram. We're at She's Off Script. Or leave us a comment in our private She's Off Script Facebook community. Thank you so much for supporting our podcast. Don't forget to rate, subscribe, and continue sharing us with your friends and families.